Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Petunia Dursley, Part 1.
May I have your attention, please? May I have your attention, please? Will the real Weird Sisters please stand up?
We're gonna have a problem here.
We're the Weird Sisters, we're the real Weird Sisters. All you other Weird Sisters are fine, but not the Vickers. Will the real Weird Sisters please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up.
Hi, and welcome to the Real Weird Sisters. I'm Alice.
And I'm Martha.
And today we're here to talk about Petunia Dursley in the first two books. Martha, are you excited to talk about Toonie?
I can't wait to talk about Beezus and Ramona for the second week in a row. I know everybody said that they really wanted a three-part, four-part series week to week on the Great Sisters, the Quimbys. So I'm really excited to dive right into Ramona and her mother this week.
Yeah, people were enthused about that idea, just like I predicted.
Exactly. So Alice, what did you think of Ramona the Brave?
Well, we are here to talk about two sisters, sort of.
One sister.
Yeah, there's some hints about Lily at the beginning of the series. But yeah, unfortunately, Martha, I'm sorry to break it to you, but we're not going to be talking about Beezus and Ramona anymore.
What? That's all I prepared for. All my notes are about Beezus and Ramona and Beezus and how Beezus grew up to be a nosy neighbor who couldn't stop spying on Mrs. Next Door.
You think that's who Ramona would have been?
I said Beezus.
Oh, I was thinking Ramona.
Why would Ramona do that? Ramona's clearly the Lily.
Well, I guess so. That's what, just because you want to be Lily.
No, neither of them are really a Beezus, a Petunia or a Lily. But I think if we had to compare them, probably it's just pretty clear it's the younger sister.
Yeah, although the age difference being much smaller does make it a lot more difficult.
Yeah, well, and as we learned in the very first chapter, Mrs. Dursley is actually very blonde, so doesn't fit with the Quimbys.
Right, and looks just like her movie counterpart.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, so before we actually get into talking about Petunia, it always sounds weird when some of these characters that we refer to, like Petunia Dursley, like she hardly ever goes by that. It's always Aunt Petunia. But before we get into talking, and it's kind of the same when we talk about like Mr. and Mrs. Weasley or Molly and Arthur.
To me, it's much harder to call Mr. Weasley. Molly and Arthur always feels really wrong to say. Petunia, from Aunt Petunia to Petunia, is not that weird for me because I feel like I call a lot of our aunts and uncles by their first name.
Ooh, so you're on a more of a close first name basis with
Well,
them,
it just
huh?
is like it's not that weird to go from Aunt Petunia to Petunia or from Uncle Vernon to Vernon.
Yeah, you're probably right. But when I just, at the beginning of the show, when I kept saying Petunia Dursley, it was like so formal.
It's weird to call her first and last name, yeah. And then yeah. It's also weird because in the first chapter, she's Mrs. Dursley the whole time.
Right, I know. So she's got a lot of names going on here. Before we actually get into talking about her, we do have one bit of housekeeping.
Housekeeping.
And that is...
I'll come back later then.
Exactly. And that is that our holiday show is coming up. We like to do an annual Real Weird holiday show. And Martha, you know what that means.
Deck the halls with holiday parodies.
Exactly. And that was a great example of what we're looking for.
Except for I would rather have the lyrics be about something with the show or Harry Potter or something that's not just this is a holiday parody.
Yeah, so
this is a holiday parody. It is a holiday parody.
You're almost as good as Shut Up Tim at this
yeah
point.
Thank you. That's what the angle I was going for. Yeah. Shout out to Grace, who already sent us her holiday parody.
Yeah, and we actually had somebody else reach out. I'm not going to say who it was yet. I don't want to give spoilers about who's going to be featured on the holiday show.
Guys, I don't want a lot for Christmas. There's just one thing I need.
And what is that?
I don't care about the presents underneath the Christmas tree.
What do you actually care about?
I just want a holiday parody more than I could ever see.
Wow. Well, well done.
Make my wish come true. Holiday parody, all I want for Christmas is you.
All I want for is all I want from Christmas from you.
I was saying it to the holiday parody. That's all I want for Christmas is you.
Okay,
holiday parody.
Sense. Yeah, made
holiday parody,
sense.
All I want for Christmas is you.
Perfect. Okay, well, yeah, we're looking
all
for
all I want for Christmas is tunes.
Yeah, so we are looking for holiday song parodies. Please email them in to realweirdsisters@gmail.com, and we would love to play your song on the show. They don't need to be super long, like, if you send us a full-length song, that's fine, but you don't have to. And
if you do, we might not play the whole thing. Just right. Sorry.
We might play a portion of it. So just be warned. Like, don't feel like you have to put in a 3-minute long song. So
yeah, I'd say 90 seconds max.
Yeah, it's probably what we would end up playing. If you want to record longer, we can always, pick which clip we think would be best. But
sure.
Yeah. All right. But any other specifications on the song, Martha? Or do you want to sing any more parodies before we move on?
I think I've had enough of that. I think you've had enough of that based on our behind-the-scenes conversation that we just had. So.
Yeah.
But I will say I'm very excited for the segments that we have coming for our holiday show. You all should be excited as well because it'll be a fun one.
The holiday show is always really fun, in my opinion. So
it's especially fun for those of us who don't have to edit it.
I was just going to say it. I'm very grateful that you spend the time to edit all of the songs and all of the segments together into one big magical blast of holiday cheer.
Exactly. So I can't wait for that. It is a fun little holiday tradition for me to be sitting in the airport during my layover from Baltimore to Montana, editing the holiday show. It's a fun tradition.
Frantically editing the holiday show.
Exactly.
Yeah. So... all right, well, let's go ahead and talk about Petunia Dursley, Aunt Petunia, Mrs. Dursley. She is featured pretty heavily in the first book, especially. And then as we move through the series, she kind of has, like, books where she's more heavily featured or not. I think in part two, we're going to maybe have some more, like, serious conversations about Petunia. But these first couple of books, she's really a lot more of a caricature.
Very much a caricature. We won't be doing any serious conversations here because, we're not going to be getting to the fifth book yet.
So true. Remember my last, Martha.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't have anything to do with serious. I was trying to make a serious black pun.
Well, I was trying to make a pun on I don't know what.
Okay. Yeah, even though we will be focusing on the first half of the series this week, it's actually a very exciting landmark day for us because this is actually our first character study of book 5, or really it's our first real weirdo of the fifth book. We've made it all the way through our series of real weirdos of the first 4 books. So this was our first Petunia won the real weirdo for the first time, I guess, in book 5. She didn't win it at all until Order of the Phoenix.
Yeah, and I think that that's sort of, like, indicative of how she is in the first 4 books. Like,
yeah.
She doesn't do, like, she's in it quite a bit, but she doesn't do anything super standout. Like, I think one of the things that I noticed when I was preparing for this episode was how much Uncle Vernon is definitely, like, the dominant character out of the Dursleys, and then how Aunt Petunia is just kind of, like, hiding behind him a lot. And she does become a lot more interesting starting in the fifth book.
Yeah, so that's actually, I remember talking about that a lot in the book club, but I'm sorry, I misspoke. She is not our very first real weirdo of book five.
Oh, I'm glad that you're acknowledging this, yeah, because this is sort of the budgie in the room.
Yeah, we have to acknowledge the Bajuragar in the room. the real first weirdo, or the real first real weirdo, however you want to say it, of the, book five.
The realest weirdo of the series, to be honest.
The realest, weirdest weirdo of the series, Bungie, was the winner of the first chapter of Order of the Phoenix. However, our Bungie character study, I think we're saving that for maybe April Fool's or something. Yeah, I don't know.
He is amazing.
Alice cut him off of the calendar somehow.
He's amazing, but somehow I didn't know. Like, and it's not really like our choice, I would say. I would say it's been given to us by the author that we don't have enough source material. Like,
yeah, we only have like half a sentence about him. Now, to be fair, we've made do with less before.
Less than Bungie?
Well, I mean, we talk for 2 hours about 5 minutes of each part of Prisoner of Azkaban. I'm pretty sure we could make a meal out of the half a sentence of Bungie content.
And I know that there's people out there that want us to do that. Like you said, maybe sometime on a April Fool's show or something.
We'll do it one day. I don't count us out yet.
Don't count us out. I mean, Bungie is in my opinion, is the MVP of the fifth book. There are some amazing other bees in the fifth book, but Bungie, come on, he can water ski.
Well, let's talk about the HBIC here, the HBIC of PD.
What's PD?
Privet Drive.
Oh, of Privet Drive. Okay, thank you. Yeah, we're going to talk about the HBIC of PD. So we get to see her straight off the bat, very first page of the book. And like you already kind of mentioned, our description of her is a little different than what we see in the movie. She's described as thin and blonde, nearly twice the usual amount of neck, which came in very useful as she spent so much of her time craning over garden fences to spy on the neighbors. So, I can kind of see why it would be difficult to find somebody that had like an overlong neck. And I don't know that that's necessarily crucial, but it is interesting that they changed her from having blonde hair to brown hair.
Yeah, not a big deal for me. It's not the same as the eye color. And I know that the eye color thing, honestly, like, we've said this a zillion times, but the eye color issue is the fact that Lily and Harry have different color eyes. It's not the fact that they're not having green eyes. Like, honestly, if Lily had blue eyes and Daniel Radcliffe had blue eyes, it wouldn't really be that big of a deal.
Right. And the fact that that's a key plot point, too.
Right.
Yeah.
But the fact that Petunia's blonde in the book and brown-haired in the movie, not a big deal. I think that Fiona Shaw is a great actress.
Yeah, and I think that this is one where, like, most people would not remember what she was described as in the book. Like,
right. Her being blonde is not really a character trait.
And, like, Fiona Shaw did such an iconic performance that I think right. She's definitely overtaken people's memory of who Aunt Petunia is. So, just interesting mm-hmm. to note. So the next thing that we get mentioned about Mrs. Dursley is the fact that she has this horrible sister who is un-Dursley-ish as possible to be. So that's mentioned like straight off the bat and kind of a bit of foreshadowing that it seems like, you know, they're focusing so much on this right off the bat. They're definitely the Potters are going to come into play at some point.
Yes, definitely. This chapter we've talked about ad nauseum as far as the tone of the way The Boy Who Loved is written. It's very omniscient and very I'm the narrator kind of voice. But yeah, we get the hint about Mrs. Dursley having a secret sister before we actually hear about Mrs. Dursley going about her normal day, which is pretty interesting. This is honestly probably like some of the most characterization of Petunia that we really get in these first couple books. Maybe even the whole series of like what a normal day in Petunia's life is like. I guess it's different when Dudley is a baby versus when he's older, but probably not honestly that different.
Yeah, this is like a chance for us to like kind of peek behind the curtain and just see what Aunt Petunia does, you know, because we don't, after this, we're going to focus on Harry, obviously. So yeah, she does seem like she's a real gossip. Like she's been spying on the neighbor, and she's telling all about the problems that Mrs. Next Door is having with her daughter, and seems to have all the gossip on that from Mr. Dursley. And then also Dudley learned a new word. So, exciting day for her.
Yeah, won't. little tyke.
Yeah, but, like, Mr. Dursley gets, or Vernon, gets a ton more, like, focus in this chapter, and it really is kind of interesting. Like, I feel like there's definitely kind of a, like, he's definitely established as, like, the dominant person in the relationship, like, kind of controlling the way that they live. And then also, I don't know, it's a little bit of a moment where it's kind of, like, supposed to seem like she has a really boring life. Like, her her day-to-day stuff is very trivial. Like, that's definitely the message that's kind of given.
Definitely. She's just this, like, busybody who's not really, like, doing anything important. Not that Mr. Dursley's job is described as super important, but it is kind of interesting that it's from his perspective, like, learning about the rumblings of something odd happening when it's his sister-in-law and rather than Mrs. Dursley's sister. Mr. Dursley's kind of the one who's putting the pieces together in this chapter, thinking that it has something to do with his sister-in-law's crowd rather than I don't know whether Mrs. Dursley was watching the news at all or trying to put any of this together, but it is kind of an interesting choice to have it be kind of Mr. Dursley playing detective rather than Petunia.
Right. And I think that it honestly, like, I know we're going to see a lot more of Petunia's backstory than we end up seeing of Vernon's backstory. But
Toonie, you mean?
Yeah, Toonie's backstory. We get to see that she obviously was, like, turned off to magic and, like, hurt by the concept of magic and some of the interactions that she had with that when she was a child. But I really feel like this chapter is kind of showing us that, I don't know, maybe Mr. Dursley, like, cemented this, like, hatred of magic. I feel like he hates it almost more than she does.
Yeah, I think definitely, like, I definitely think we can't discount the fact that she, like, kind of had these childhood experiences that made her resentful towards the magic, but I feel like it went from resentment to just, like, pure disgust and, like, hatred rather than just, like, the resentment and ignoring of it, of Lily. I feel like, yeah, that it was probably Vernon who kind of pushed her towards that extreme. Because it seems like he's not just, like, that's her sister, like, it's like he... it's almost his problem that he has to deal with. It's not just, like, something that has, like, an effect on his wife.
Right, and it's almost like when she probably introduced this concept to him, I think she probably knew that he was so straight-laced that she would kind of have to sell it to him as, like, I absolutely hate this. It's the worst thing in the entire world. It's disgusting. I never want to be affiliated with it ever. So I feel like she probably presented it to him in that way, and then it, like, became how she really felt. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think I've really thought of it that much before, but I do think that there are some people who are going to say no, they think that actually Vernon's curiosity in this chapter, as much as it's, like, portrayed as, like, he's, like, this normal, straight-laced, boring person, like, he actually is the one who's, like I said, playing detective in this chapter, and, like, he's the one who's, like, puts it all together, I guess. So I do wonder what, I mean, I feel like some people might say, like, she pushed him, she told him this story of, like, how horrible her sister was and how, like, horrible magic was. It stole her sister from her.
Yeah.
And, like, he's being anti-magic for her sake. I guess that you could see it on both sides.
Yeah. And I kind of feel like it's maybe, like, a self-perpetuating cycle, too. Because
right.
I feel like then he reacts this, like, they definitely feed off of each other and the way that they view this whole thing. But it's definitely, like you said, pretty interesting that she doesn't get as much, like, screen time during this whole scene.
Exactly.
So we get the conversation between the Dursleys about the Potters, and it's interesting because Vernon, like, brings it up very hesitantly. Like, he almost doesn't want to mention it, brings up the name, or that the fact that they have a son, and he'd be about Dudley's age, and what's his name again? Howard, isn't it? And then she responds, Harry, nasty common name, if you ask me.
So that's what I mean with, like, she definitely is being very anti her family here, too.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like he's maybe being pushed by her to be so hateful
yeah,
of magic.
Do you think some of it? And the Potters. Do you think some of it? And I kind of do think that. I kind of, to answer my own question, I think yes. But do you think that it's driven by like her own, her insecurity of the idea that he's so normal that he would probably leave or, you know, be disgusted
yes.
with her if she wasn't equally disgusted with magic?
I think, yeah, because she has that, like, she originally had the temptation of, like, wanting to go to Hogwarts and stuff. So I think that she probably wants to push that away or repress that as much as possible. Because, yeah, I think that she knows that Vernon would not be interested in her if she was that way.
And I don't think she, like, gave him a chance to see if he would. Like, I'm not trying to, like, extend too much grace to
right.
him, I guess. But, like, I feel like she has this fear. And so then she reacts in this way that's so extreme. So that she can make it very clear to him, like, this is how I feel, and so that he won't, like, leave.
Right, and partially also because she probably knows there's no chance of her ever becoming mad. Like, she tried that already.
Yeah.
So I think that she kind of is like, well, if I can't, then I might as well just be as anti it as possible.
Yeah. So anyway, again, interesting. But, yeah, they have this conversation, and it is pretty funny because, like, there's the dramatic irony of us knowing that Mr. Dursley actually knows that it's Harry. He's just really hoping for some confirmation the other way, and then she just
right.
completely ruins that for him. Harry, nasty common name, if you ask me.
Right.
So, that's pretty much the end of that. Vernon, like, doesn't even dare to say that he's heard this name on the street that day. Like, he just wants to kind of bring it up separately, but yeah, he doesn't even mention to her, so she's gonna be even more like shocked by the fact that Harry's on the doorstep because she doesn't even get this tip off like he did.
Right.
But she is the one who opens the front door. It says that she screams, and that's all we get to see of that scene, but we know that she's the one who discovers Harry.
Yeah. I mean I feel like the scream is not to, like, probably most people would scream seeing a baby on their doorstep.
Scary.
Yeah.
It was
weird.
It was really scary.
It was really scary.
So, anyway, anything else on the first chapter before we move to Harry's interactions with her?
I think we're ready to move on.
Okay. All right. So, first thing in the next chapter, we're going to get Harry getting woken up by Aunt Petunia. And immediately, like, we can tell his perspective on her. Like, everything is very, like, she's very shrill and she's screeching. And Harry, you could just tell, like, that they don't have a good relationship.
Yeah, it's pretty clear. She's waking up. Like, she doesn't say anything.
Good morning,
like,
sweetums.
Right. Up. Get up now. Like, what a friendly way to wake up.
Yeah, so I feel like she was pretty, like, cartoony in the first chapter, but this is where she becomes even more so, like, cartoon villain, I think.
Totally, yes.
Yeah. But yeah, then she's, like, pestering him to get up, and she says, I want you to look after the bacon, and don't you dare let it burn. I want everything perfect on Duddy's birthday.
I mean, I guess the one thing you could say, and Dumbledore basically says this, is, like, at least Harry is getting some, like, practical education growing up in the Dursleys compared to what Dudley, like, Dudley has no skills, you know, when he leaves the Dursleys, whenever he does end up leaving his parents' house. Harry learns how to cook as a 12-year or 10-year-old.
And he learned maths and stuff, too.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess so. He's kind of being forced into, like, quite a bit of, like...
Well, yes.
I mean, child labor kind of stuff around
I'm
the house.
I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying, like, what Dumbledore says, basically. It's like, if your two choices are to be this one or to be the one who just doesn't even... He's so coddled, like, I
right.
do think it's a little bit better to be Harry in this situation.
Yeah.
It is a funny image to have Harry looking after the bacon.
Yeah, agreed. So then Harry, of course, he didn't remember that it was Dudley's birthday. This is a nasty reminder for him. So, throughout this chapter, we kind of have a lot of, like, memories of Harry growing up and things that he's asked Aunt Petunia over the years. And times when she's freaked out on him about different things.
In the car crash when your parents died, and don't ask questions.
Don't ask questions. That was the first rule for a quiet life with the Dursleys.
It is so funny, like, the impact that Jim Dale had on me, that I really, it's, like, almost impossible to read this book anymore, the specifically Sorcerer's Stone, without hearing, like, every line in Jim Dale's voice.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I don't think I have that quite as much. I didn't listen to him as much as you did, but.
Well, I feel like I listened to this book with Jim Dale more than any other, like, yeah. By far. I did have this one on CD, so I think I would just, like, regularly be listening to it. But I could just hear, like, don't ask questions. That was the first rule for a quiet life with the Dursleys.
Yes, that sounds exactly right.
Well, no, I wouldn't say exactly right.
Well, it's funny. And also, the one thing I was going to say is I feel like in the first book, he didn't quite have all the characters' voices,
no,
like how they were going to be for the rest of the series. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't as bad as Roy Dotrice, but yeah.
Yeah. If you know, you know.
So,
may he rest in peace.
Right. Yes, and no disrespect on his name, but...
No.
Yeah. So then we get to see the dynamic between Petunia and Dudley pretty early on here, too. And we already had hints by her calling him Duddy and how she wants everything perfect for his birthday. But we get, to, like, we hear about how she thinks that Dudley looks like a baby angel. Harry often said that Dudley looked like a pig in a wig.
Right.
And then we see the interaction about Dudley's birthday presents.
Yeah. Everybody knows this whole scene, I'm sure. But yeah, he has 36. But then, darling, you haven't counted Auntie Marge's present. See, it's here under this big one from Mummy and Daddy.
It kind of sounded like Dudley's voice.
Yeah, well, that was I was just trying to do the intonation that Jim Dale does, not so much as the voice.
Yeah, so, but yeah, Aunt Petunia definitely, like, catering to his every whim.
Right.
I mean, when your kid is pitching a fit because he has only 36 presents, like, okay, the appropriate thing to do would be to say... 36
you get
is a lot of
you
presents.
Get, you get what you get and you don't throw a fit. And also 36 presents is way more than any child needs.
It's kind of embarrassing, but I remember when I first read this thinking like, well, 36 isn't that many.
I had the same thought when I was when I was like 10 reading. I was like, well, I mean, it's not like it's 50. Like,
I
don't know why.
I was thinking like 100 seemed like a lot or something. Like,
okay, well, 100.
Well, yeah, I know, but like we didn't, I mean, it's not like we would get that many presents, but... We didn't get 36 presents as kids, but in my mind, I think as a kid, I was thinking that was like how much we got.
I think, yeah, I was thinking we got like 25 or something, and 36 didn't seem that many more than
and
what we got.
And we didn't get 25, though, either.
No, we that's probably got like 12.
Yeah, that's right.
Which still, I mean, it still is a lot, to be fair.
Yeah. And that, by the way, that was from lots of people, not just our parents. But,
oh, yeah. Well, neither is the 39.
Well, I know, but I'm just clarifying for people. But, yeah, no, I just, that's always what I think about in this scene is, like, 36 is a lot of presents. And I used to, for some reason, think it wasn't.
Yeah, me too.
So, yeah, she's definitely, like, quick to appease him, too. She's got the fabulous plan to get another 2 presents while they're out today. How's that, Popkin? 2 more presents. Is that all right?
Yeah, then he can't count that 37 plus 2 is 39.
It's a pretty funny scene.
Yeah, funny. Yeah, I think we've all heard it before.
Yeah. Another, to me, almost this next scene is funnier, just the way that it's written. This is after Petunia gets the phone call from Mrs. Fig saying that she's broken her leg. She comes back in and she's looking both angry and worried. And then the way that they have this conversation is really awful because they're trying to figure out what to do with Harry as if he's not in the room and just so, like, rude to him and acting like he's going to blow up the house. And it's pretty funny.
Yeah, and she's like, don't be silly, Vernon. She hates the boy. Yeah, I do think it's funny. I always have wondered, and I'm surprised. Sorry that she never won the real weirdo, but I do wonder who this Yvonne is.
Yeah, I know.
What's her name? Your friend, Yvonne.
Her one friend.
Right.
On vacation in Mallorca.
Yeah, well, thank you for pronouncing it the German way.
I don't know how to pronounce that in English.
Well, Jim Dale says Mallorca.
Oh, does he? Okay. Yes. Well, anyway. Then,
not Mallorca, though.
One line that kills me is when it says, Harry says you could just leave me here. And it says, Aunt Petunia looked as though she just swallowed a lemon.
Yeah, and come back and find the house in ruins. Harry, I won't blow up the house.
And then, yeah, she tries to come up with the idea of leaving him in the car at the zoo. And Uncle Vernon doesn't like that because the car's new. So they have...
That car's new. He's not sitting in it alone.
And then Dudley starts crying and fake crying. And then, Dinky Diddy Dums, don't cry. Mummy won't let him spoil your special day.
I don't want him to come. He always spoils everything.
And then he shoots Harry a nasty grin to the gap in his mother's arms. It's quite the scene.
Quite the scene, yes.
But yeah, Aunt Petunia's... I don't know. I feel like there is a lot to unpack as far as thinking about Aunt Petunia's relationship to Dudley and why she spoils him like that. Like, do you think...
I don't know. It's hard to really...
It's cartoony, but do you think it comes back to, like, her... like feeling like she was kind of treated like the second class citizen when she was growing up?
That's probably the most generous interpretation you can have, I guess. That, yeah, she probably is overcompensating for feeling like she was kind of not as well loved as a child, or that Lily got more of the spotlight than she did. So that's probably accurate, but also maybe a little bit overly generous,
yeah,
to her too.
I agree. Like, there's not, okay, spoiling your kid is one thing, but then, like, treating Harry the way she does, that's pretty
right.
Unforgivable.
Yeah, and then also it's just, it's not just that, it's, like, it's so fakey, too. Like, I mean,
right.
I...
It is definitely, like, this cartoon kids book right. vibe of, like, kind of like a Roald Dahl kind of feeling.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah. So it's hard for me to be, like, really even, like, condemn her that much, too, because it's just really pretty hard to believe that this is how a mom really is being, like, to this extreme. And I know there are spoiled kids, of course.
Well, and the thing is, too, like,
I don't... super accurate to be this extreme.
It's interesting to think about Aunt Petunia, at, you know, from a psychological perspective, but at the same time, like, we have to say that, like, just the way that this is written with the humorous tone, like, and it is very cartoony. So applying, like, real world stuff is difficult because, you know, if this was real, it wouldn't be funny at all.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, it's only funny because it's so over the top and it's cartoonized. I don't know if that's a word.
Well, yeah, caricatured.
Yeah, so anyway, just a kind of a little disclaimer on the conversation.
Right, which I think we've made that disclaimer enough, but still can't hurt to say.
Yeah, true. And I mean, I do find this very funny, but it's because of the tone and the perspective and the fact that Harry, the character, is actually fine.
Right, like, exactly. Yeah,
right. So anyway, they end up deciding that they're going to take him to the zoo, but, you know, Harry's promising he won't do anything bad, but the problem is, and then we launch into some memories of the fact that some, you know, weird things tend to happen around Harry. And we get some pretty funny ones, some funny memories. One of them being that Aunt Petunia had cut Harry's hair. I love this one. It always kills me so much. She cut his hair so short he was almost bald, except for his bangs, which she left to hide that horrible scar.
I love this vision, or this visual of Harry with, like, almost being completely bald, but then also having the bangs still hiding his scar. Yeah, and I also like how it's just like imagining Petunia being like at the end of her rope, like seeing Harry's hair and be like, I've had it, I'm gonna do this myself.
Yeah. And yeah, so then in the memory, Harry is, you know, really dreading going to school the next day, and he wakes up and somehow his hair was pre-haircut again. And so that was one of the weird things that happened to him with no explanation.
Yes, so lucky for Harry.
Second event was when Aunt Petunia was trying to force him into a revolting old sweater of Dudley's. brown with orange puffballs. And as she's trying to pull it over his head, it shrinks and shrinks until it might have fitted a hand puppet, but it certainly wouldn't fit Harry.
I do like that one because apparently Aunt Petunia believed, she convinced herself that she had decided it must have shrunk in the wash, and to his great relief, Harry wasn't punished. how on earth could it have shrunk in the wash? She's kidding herself with that one.
Yeah, that one was weird because she's like, let me put, how she was trying to put that on Harry's head. Right. How old was he at this point, do you think?
Probably six or something.
Yeah, he already has the taste to know that this isn't going to be a good look. So it's not like he was three or something.
Right.
But anyway, we have a couple more scenes of Harry getting into trouble, but Mrs. Dursley's not featured in them. So then we get a scene where they're driving to the zoo, and I feel like we do get a little bit of characterization of Aunt Petunia here, because it's just Uncle Vernon complaining to Aunt Petunia. And I feel like this is pretty emblematic of how they are in general. He seems to just talk a lot, and then Aunt Petunia just kind of nods and affirms him.
Yeah, and I mean, I think she probably feels pretty safe in this, dynamic. I think that it works for them. Again, it's pretty cartoonish and, pretty, I think, flat as far as character development goes. But I do think that this does feel like a safe, relationship for Petunia, that she can just be there and, he'll just talk at her and, it's kind of comfortable.
Yeah, that's probably true. Okay, so then skipping ahead a little bit, we don't really see Aunt Petunia again until after the zoo incident with the snake, but she she ends up pretty shaken by the fact that this vanishing glass incident happened, and so the zoo director himself has to make her a cup of strong sweet tea, which always cracks me up.
Yeah, it cracks me up to see Petunia being so shaken by this.
Yeah. And then one final scene in this chapter is of Harry kind of reflecting back on times when they've run into weird strangers that have seemed to know who he is. And I think that this was pretty important to characterizing Petunia in the beginning of this book here, because it says that one time when the tiny man in a violet top hat bowed at him, Aunt Petunia feels the need to angrily rush out of the shop with Harry and forsake her mission to buy something in the shop, just completely harried in the fact that she's trying to get away from this stranger. So
kind of completely harried.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, it's not surprising that Aunt Petunia would react this way, I think, but I think regardless of whether these people are magical or not, I don't think she likes to associate with anyone who's kind of different.
No, I think that's pretty accurate to say.
So we have a couple other pretty funny scenes with Petunia before the whole Hogwarts letter arrives. And one of our favorites that we've talked about a lot on the show was when Dudley tries on his new Smeltings uniform.
Oh, my goodness. It's the proudest day of my life.
Bursting into tears.
Right.
Yeah, she couldn't believe that was her Ickle Duddykins. He looked so handsome and grown up. meanwhile, Harry's trying not to, he can't say anything because he felt like two of his ribs might already have cracked from trying not to laugh.
Right. And then the even better scene is coming right next, which is when Aunt Petunia's dyeing some of Dudley's old things gray for Harry's school uniform, and Harry seriously doubts that it'll look just like everybody else's when she's done.
Yes,
he tried not to think about how he was going to look on his first day at Stonewall High, like he was wearing bits of old elephant skin, probably.
And I love how Harry says when he sees the uniform in a bowl, he's like, I didn't realize it had to be so wet. And she's like, don't be stupid. I'm dyeing some of Dudley's old things gray for you. It'll look just like everyone else's when I'm finished.
I didn't realize it had to be so wet.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good stuff. I do wish we got a little bit more of Harry and having to go to Stonewall High.
Yeah, Me too. You know, they put people's heads down the toilet the first day at Stonewall.
They stuffed people's heads down the toilet the first day at Stonewall. Want to come upstairs and practice?
No thanks. The toilet, the poor toilet's never had anything as nasty as your head down it, or whatever Harry says.
Then he left before Dudley could work out what he'd said. Got him.
Got him good, Harry. This is where Harry got to be so good at his comebacks.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, his career of comebacks started with Dudley.
For sure. So, all right. So then the next big scene is Harry getting the letter. And again, it's kind of interesting because it's like mostly Vernon reacting to it, but we also do get Petunia, and she does not act normal either. Vernon definitely responds a little more extremely, but Petunia is definitely very, like, shaken and upset by this whole thing as well.
Right. It says she looks as though she might faint. She clutched her throat and made a choking noise. Vernon! Oh, my goodness, Vernon!
They must have just been in so much denial. I mean, they're so mean to Harry anyway, but, like, did they really think that this idea of being mean to him was going to truly stamp the magic out or whatever?
Right, like Petunia, I mean, honestly, maybe this is kind of why we get it more from Vernon's perspective, because Petunia had to have known it wouldn't work. Like, Vernon probably did think it would work, but Petunia, she's the one who saw this with Lily. Like, Lily had nothing. Like, I don't think that she could, like, delude herself into thinking that, like, somebody, I mean, I guess maybe she could, like, say it was Snape's fault or something, but, like, I just think that Petunia was totally deluded to think that this could work. Vernon, like, I can understand a little bit more why he might thought it would work, because he didn't experience it when he was this age.
And he doesn't really know how it works as much.
Right.
From a firsthand perspective. But the other thing is, like, she's seen some of this magic popping up over Harry's life. And she's...
Right. It's the same way it was for Lily. And also, she read Dumbledore's Last. So, like, I think she knows, like, there's pretty good chance that, you know, they know where he lives. They know where, like,
right,
a lot of stuff, you know.
How it's could not they like possibly he's... know where he sleeps. I mean, honestly, you have to kind of start to wonder, and I know this is all, you know, early in the series, I don't know that the author had everything worked out at this point, but you do have to kind of think, you know, from the perspective of what we know now, like, this is probably bringing back some bad memories for her of, like, the letter arriving, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I mean, I think that the part that she was the most hurt by was when she got the letter from Dumbledore rejecting her, basically. So she probably is, you know, you can pretty easily draw the line of this as a, like, you know, defense mechanism of after having had the rejection from Dumbledore that she's now so anti any kind of stuff.
Yeah, but the letter arriving in the mail is, like, you know, kind of a trigger, like, back to when Lily got her letter,
right,
and then got kind of taken away from her.
True, true. Yeah, I also, it's funny to think about, like, yeah, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous of the Dursleys to not believe any wizards know where they live and stuff, but, like, it is a little bit creepy that they know exactly where Harry sleeps.
And, like, why is that on the letter? Like, is that just trying to be, like, showing off? Like, look how much we know.
Yeah, that's definitely how it feels.
Yeah. But anyway, so we just mainly see her, you know, over the top, like, how could they possibly know where he sleeps? And, most of what she's saying is kind of asking questions. And then Uncle Vernon is saying things like, you know, what he's coming up with, what the plan is going to be.
Yeah, she asked whether they should write back, tell them we don't want.
Yeah. And then Uncle Vernon, No, we'll ignore it. If they don't get an answer, yes, that's best. We won't do anything.
Yeah, great plan.
Yeah. So by the time that they actually have to take off and drive, this is definitely where I feel like the Uncle Vernon as the alpha of the family is coming into play a lot. Like, he's leading, and Petunia, I think, is more than happy to just kind of have him take the lead because she doesn't know what to do. But they're in the car, and even Aunt Petunia didn't dare ask where they were going. And Uncle Vernon's, like, taking a sharp turn every so often to shake them off.
Shake them off.
And then Dudley kind of starts pleading with Aunt Petunia. And Aunt Petunia's even kind of, you know, starting to feel like maybe they should go home. She's not quite as extreme as Vernon as far as like her commitment to this plan, I guess. But Uncle Vernon doesn't even seem to hear her when she asks if they should just go home. But yeah, so Dudley's kind of like pleading with her because he feels like she's the more rational person in this moment.
Right. Yeah. Dudley tries and fails just to reason with her.
The great Umberto's on tonight. I want to stay somewhere with a television.
Right. I also like, Daddy's gone mad, hasn't he?
I think Daddy has gone mad in this scene.
Yeah, I think so too. But it's also funny, like the television thing. Like, why couldn't they be staying at hotels that have TVs?
It's easier to stay somewhere where the wizards can't track them, and a lot of those places don't have TVs.
I guess not. Yeah, Vernon knows best. It's true.
Right. So they end up staying at the shack. We know Hagrid shows up, and then we're going to see Petunia's reaction to Hagrid. And to all of the, you know, what he tells her. And then we're going to see Petunia's first moment of kind of revealing, like, that she knows a lot more about this than Harry ever had the idea that she did.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because Harry's kind of like, you don't see, like, his actual reaction. But I feel like the one moment that he has there where he gets to react to Vernon and Petunia is he goes, You knew I'm a wizard? And I feel like he is, like, directing that question at Petunia more than at Vernon just because of, like, previously we saw that he had been, you know, Petunia was the one who he asked questions to growing up about his scar and about his parents and stuff like that. So I feel like Harry, while, of course, he is completely neglected and abused by the Dursleys growing up, like, he still is hurt to find out what they've kept from him and Petunia more so than Vernon, I think.
Yeah, and I think he's honestly just like shocked. Like, he can't believe that they knew that and were able to keep that from him. And then, yeah, this is where Petunia like loses it. And I think in the movie, this is obviously one of her most iconic moments, is her monologue about her sister and how she was so awful and how she was a freak, or however she says it. A freak.
Yeah, you love to quote that one. I feel like I can't do it, but
I can't do it either. But
you always want me to, and I can't do it.
Well, that one girl on TikTok can do it really well.
That's probably why you have it fresh in your mind.
No, I always have that fresh in my mind, but she can really. Everybody
a
will
freak.
Know. A freak.
Yeah, I can't do
yeah.
it.
Yeah, but it's a. She does, in the movie, Fiona Shaw does a very, very good job of putting the emotion into this scene, I think. It's funny, but it's also, I mean, this is kind of the realest that we see Aunt Petunia in this book.
Yeah, it's real, but it's also fake because, like, she doesn't actually see Lily as a freak. Like, I think she does miss Lily, and she misses the Lily that she grew up with. I think that maybe she's convinced herself that she sees Lily as a freak, but, like, it's a, like, you know, a lie to herself.
Right. And in this, I mean, yes, she's putting up, this is what she believes in this moment, I think. It's maybe not her true and honest accounting of what all of her emotions really are, but I do think she has convinced herself that this is how she feels.
Yeah, I agree.
So, she also reveals that they were blown up and they didn't get killed in a car crash, which, you know, Harry sees that as definitely like one of the bigger lies that she told him.
Right. How could a car crash kill Lily and James Potter? It's an outrage, a scandal.
Direct quote from the book. So yeah, that's pretty much most of what happens with Petunia in this book. We do see her again briefly a few times. When they're heading to London, she has to kind of, she's kind of the peacemaker of the family at times too. She has to convince Dudley to sit next to Harry in the car. He's like, doesn't want to sit next to Harry. When Uncle Vernon takes him to go to King's Cross. So we see that. Then we're going to see one of their legendary Christmas presents they send Harry, a 50 pence piece.
Yeah, it ends up being pretty much the best gift that he ever gets from them.
Right. And then finally, at the end of the book, we see Uncle Vernon and Aunt Petunia at King's Cross to pick Harry up. And Uncle Vernon standing there and Aunt Petunia and Dudley are cowering behind him. So she's not in it much after this scene with Hagrid, but...
Yeah, kind of a symbolic positioning for her to be cowering behind Vernon.
Yeah, I think she's frequently seen doing that in the first few,
in his
four
shadow,
books,
yeah.
And kind of, like, seeking a lot of protection from him.
Right.
All right, well, before we get into Chamber of Secrets, we are going to take a quick ad break, and we'll be right back.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, so Chamber of Secrets, we're going to see Petunia mostly at the beginning of the book again, and there's some pretty funny scenes. Aunt Petunia is not a major player in this book, but she is definitely entertaining.
Yeah, the main Dursley scene in Chamber of Secrets, or the Dursley scene that we get, is going to be dinner with the Masons, and this is Vernon's work dinner, so it's really, again, Petunia's playing second fiddle here, but she does have the role of being the hostess in this scene. So she's still playing a, you know, decent role.
Typical that she, you know, the wife had to do all the work to get this dinner to go off without a hitch. But Mr. Dursley's the one who kind of gets credited with this scene a little bit more.
Well, he's the one who pays the bills, Alice.
Oh, wow. yeah, okay. That was a joke, by the way, everyone.
Yeah.
So
he's the one who works with drills.
That's true. He does very important work at Grunning, so we don't want to discount that.
Without work. Vernon, how would those drills get made?
Exactly. Or sold, or whatever he does.
Yeah, probably not made. I don't think Vernon has anything to do with the manufacturing.
No, he's in the office. But yeah, I'm not sure entirely what he does. But I don't know if we have any listeners out there who work at a drill company and could tell us some of the things that happen behind the scenes. I'm sure it's much more complex than we're making
it
sound.
I know that Vernon, there's no way he works in HR.
No.
There's no way he works in customer service.
No.
Maybe accounting or something with sales, but like not where he has to do any kind of like customer facing sales.
I could see him like selling to companies. I think that's what it is. Like that's why he has the Masons over, is because he's trying to secure them as clients or something.
Yeah, I guess that would make sense.
But all right, so before we actually get into the Mason scene, there is one pretty funny scene start out the book, and this is at breakfast when Harry says to Dudley, after Dudley says pass the frying pan, Harry says he's forgotten the magic word, and it's mostly Uncle Vernon responding, but we do see Mrs. Dursley. She gives a small scream and claps her hands to her mouth.
Yeah, that's very cartoony. Also, a minute before that, when she's like telling Dudley to get more, you know, there's more bacon in the frying pan. We must build you up when we've got the chance. I don't like the sound of that school food.
Yeah, it's very over the top. She's being like one of her most like cartoony selves in this book. Like we've got the spoiling Dudley and the kind of like cowering in fear at the mention of magic. At one point it says Harry stared from his purple-faced uncle to his pale aunt. She's so pale because she's just been shaken to her core by Harry
Dudley
saying you've forgotten the magic word.
Dudley also gasped and fell out of his chair. So that's probably part of why Petunia is so in shock here, is that she just watched her big son fall on the floor.
Yeah, that's true. I think she definitely obviously is pretty connected to Dudley, and his well-being is very important to her, so it's probably given her a scare that he's fallen out of his chair. Right,
she's seeing him on the floor, yeah.
Yeah. But, so, that scene is very funny. It's very over the top, but it always does crack me up, because especially that's such a harmless phrase of you've forgotten the magic word, and that was the wrong thing to say.
Right.
So.
Very cartoony, though.
It is very cartoony. So, the next scene we see is them planning what they're going to be doing for the Mason's dinner. I guess it doesn't say he's making a sale, but he's making the biggest deal of his career. But I do picture it being like, you know, selling to certain companies of, you know, you're gonna be our distributor or something like that for drills.
Yeah, it does say some rich builder and his wife were coming to dinner and Uncle Vernon was hoping to get a huge order from him.
Oh, right. Yeah. So, I mean, it makes sense. Like, but I think you're right. Like, he's not like a salesperson in a store or something.
No, and he's not like, he's selling to companies, not to individuals.
Right. So, anyways, they go through the plan, and Uncle Vernon is sort of prompting everyone. And it reminds me of that scene in Breaking Bad where Walt and Skyler are scripting what they're going to say. But this cracks me up.
Yeah. Yeah, they go through the schedule, and Petunia is, I mean, from Petunia's perspective, again, she's just going to be playing gracious hostess.
Yes, Petunia, you will be in the lounge, waiting to welcome them graciously into our home.
Right, it's like, okay, do we really need to go through this whole thing?
Yeah, they kind of, I mean, I think Uncle Vernon feels like they do, because I think he doesn't trust anybody to, you know, act how he wants, but... one of the standout moments in this scene is when Dudley is going to say to Mr. Mason, he's going to say, "We had to write an essay about our hero at school, Mr. Mason, and I wrote about you."
And they love that idea. I'm like, how fake is that?
It was too much for both Aunt Petunia and Harry. Aunt Petunia burst into tears and hugged her son. Well, Harry ducked under the table so that they wouldn't see him laughing.
Like, how could they think that that's a good idea?
Yeah. We had to write an essay about one of our heroes in school, and I wrote about you, about, like, a construction company guy.
Right, and who
never,
you don't know.
You've never, like, even met him.
Right, that's the thing.
Yeah, whatever. But Aunt Petunia loves that idea.
Right, well, so much that she bursts into tears about it.
Yeah, she's just so proud of her sweet son, who's such a natural kiss-up.
Right.
So, they go through the plan, and Harry's supposed to be in his bedroom. Obviously, we know what happens. When he gets up to the bedroom, Dobby's there, and Dobby is here to ruin the plan. And we don't really see, like, from time to time throughout the conversation that Harry's having with Dobby, we get to hear Aunt Petunia's high, false laugh, which cracked me up. To picture her laughing, like, so falsely at their jokes and stuff. One thing that's interesting to me is that Aunt Petunia does not get that mad about the pudding. She just, like, cleans it up, basically, and then quickly punts to digging some ice cream out of the freezer for dessert. They actually can continue the meal after this, and it's finally when a barn owl swoops in to deliver Harry's, like, punishment letter. That's what pushes the Masons out of the house.
Right. Yeah, she's pretty good at, like, going with the flow here, actually, considering, like, her beautiful pudding that she made being destroyed. So, yeah, I agree. I've always thought it was kind of interesting that she's just digs some ice cream out of the freezer and doesn't, like, fly completely off the handle.
Right. I think, like, Uncle Vernon, I mean, I think they're both trying to still present, like, a pretty poised front for the Masons, but, like, they hold themselves together pretty well. I mean, Harry does get punished severely afterward, being locked in his room, but we don't really ever see her, like, yell at him or scream at him or anything.
Yeah, I mean, not saying that she doesn't, but Mr. Dursley handles most of the discipline other than when Petunia is swinging at Harry with a frying pan.
Right, yeah, that's true. So,
and I did want to quickly mention the pitiful dinner that Harry has to eat before the the Masons come, which is two slices of bread and a lump of cheese.
She spent all her energy on making that pudding. She didn't have time to make anything decent for Harry for dinner.
Right. Well, as if she would have done anything decent at all.
A lump of cheese and two pieces of bread. Wow.
I like how she's like, hurry. Throwback to the early days of the book club when I said that I thought a lump of cheese was a good descriptor of cheese. It made it sound delicious to me.
It sounds awful.
I know. That was a debate that we had.
And I think a hunk of cheese sounds more normal.
Yeah, this was the debate we had.
Yeah, but we all know how I feel about cheese, so.
Right.
There's no winning with that.
Eat quickly. The Masons will be here soon, pointing to two slices of bread and a lump of cheese. When he's looking at the loin of roast pork sizzling in the oven and the huge amount of whipped cream and sugared violet pudding. Like
maybe she could have given that to him at, like, if he wasn't going to be allowed to come to the dinner, like, couldn't he have had that as leftovers afterward?
Right.
Like, instead he gets his sad two pieces of bread and a lump of cheese.
Right.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. But, yeah, we do see Aunt Petunia feeding Harry throughout the rest of the book, or throughout the rest of the time he's at Privet Drive, because she's, like, putting... It says her hand appears from the cat flap in his door, and she pushes a bowl of canned soup into the room, which Harry can drink in half, like, in two gulps, basically.
Yeah.
He's gonna eat like a king at the Dursleys.
Well, Harry can't, he has to only drink it, he has to only drink half of it so that he can give Hedwig the other half.
Yeah, he tipped the soggy vegetables at the bottom of the bowl into her empty food tray. She ruffled her feathers and gave him a look of deep disgust.
Yeah, Harry, it's no good turning your beak up at it. That's all we've got.
I feel like Harry should have stocked up on owl food before the summer.
Yeah, well, this is his first summer after... I feel like it's the kind of lesson he learns eventually.
Yeah, I guess so. Poor Hedwig, though. She's eating the soggy vegetables from the canned soup.
It's no good turning your beak up at it. It's all we've got.
Oh, Harry is very positive.
Well, it's sweet that he's sharing his food with her.
I like how Harry says, supposing he was still alive in another 4 weeks, what would happen if he didn't turn up at Hogwarts? So, yeah. Anyway, we don't see Aunt Petunia very much in the second book. We do see her, like, Uncle Vernon comes running when the Weasleys come to get Harry in the car, and Aunt Petunia comes running in with, like, after he calls her, but that's really the rest of what we see of her in this book, which is not very much.
Yeah, well, we have to also mention of the beautiful gift that they send Harry for Christmas, a toothpick and a note telling him to find out whether he'd be able to stay at Hogwarts for the summer vacation, too.
And Harry's like, I wish.
Right.
The toothpick. Yeah.
I wonder if it's used.
Why does Aunt Petunia feel like they need to send anything? Like,
right. That's what I always say. It's like much more of a slap in the face to send something terrible than it is to just not send anything at all.
Yeah. But yeah, the toothpick has to be a low, I think, for the Dursleys.
Yeah. I wonder if it's one of those toothpicks wrapped in plastic they sell it, or that they give out at restaurants.
Like with a little plastic on the, like the little like pom pom thing on the end.
Oh no, not those. I meant like the
a plastic bag.
Right.
Yeah, I don't. I doubt it.
Wrap.
I doubt it. It's probably a used toothpick.
Yeah, I doubt it too. Yeah, that's what I'm saying too.
So, all right. Well, that is going to wrap up our discussion for now. We're going to be back next week to resume our Petunia conversation.
Don't worry, this is not our last Petunia.
Remember our last Petunia, and we will
this
remember.
This was actually our first Petunia.
Yes, and I hope by the time we talk about it for the second time, we will remember our first Petunia.
Yes.
So, but before we wrap up the show, we do need to rate and rank her. Well, I guess just rate her.
I guess you're right.
I would say at this point, Heart is probably at a one.
Yeah, I don't think we can go higher than one.
Humor is pretty high for me, but I don't know about for you.
I mean, like a 3. It's not like it's like that smart of humor is the thing. Like, it's just goofy.
Yeah.
And like fake.
Well, it's hilarious, but yeah. When she looked like she'd swallowed a lemon.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Yeah. I just think 3 is probably fair.
All right, uniqueness and creativity. I would put that fairly low at this point.
Yeah, probably 2.
Remember when we used to never go below a 3?
I know. Well, we still rarely do. So this is unique of us. So honestly, the fact that it's so unique that it's not that unique, we should probably keep it at a 3, right?
Yeah, almost. I would be tempted to say that.
Just kidding. I think 2.
And depth, I would put her at a 1 at this point.
Yeah, agreed.
We will get a little more depth from her later, but not quite yet.
Wow, a whopping 7 points from Petunia.
That's, in the rankings, that's very low.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it makes sense. She's a pretty awful person at this point in the series.
Yeah.
All right. Well, like I said, we're going to come back and talk about Petunia next week as well. But in the meantime, please make sure you are following us on all of our social media and our website. Our website is realweirdsisters.com. Facebook, we're at facebook.com/realweirdsisters. Twitter, we're at realweirdsister. And Instagram, at realweirdsisterspod. Remember, we are looking for holiday parody songs, so please send those into realweirdsisters@gmail.com. We'd love to play that on the show. And finally, if you'd like to support the show financially, we would love to have you as a patron of our show. And you can check that out on our Patreon page. We're at patreon.com/realweirdsisters. You can find all of our reward levels, and we would love to welcome you to our patron community.
Yes, big shout out to our patrons. Couldn't do it without you, and very appreciative of all your support.
Definitely. Finally, please make sure that you have subscribed to us in whatever podcatcher you're using, and that if you have a chance and you haven't already, we would love to get a 5-star rating and review from you. We love reading those on the show, and we do so periodically at this point. So
we do have a new one to read, but I'm going to save it for next week because I want to be the one to read it. I don't want to put Alice through reading it because it's very long, and I feel like I feel like Alice would rather have me read this one.
Does it say y'all in it?
No, but it just feels like one that you would rather have me read.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm waiting with bated breath.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if I've seen it or not.
I don't know if you have either. It's really great. And the person who wrote it, I think, will know what I'm talking about.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Well, anyway, thank you so much for listening. We will be back next week to pick up with to continue with our Petunia Dursley character study. And until then, we're the Real Weird Sisters.
We're the Weird Sisters. We're the Real Weird Sisters. All you other Weird Sisters are fine, but not the Vickers. Will the Real Weird Sisters please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.